I feel that place, you know, when you go into that place. I love that shit.
It's definitely an out of body experience. When there's been times where I'm on stage and I literally feel my body, feel myself in the bass player or in the DJ. And I'm just like, I'm just flowing. I'm just like, you know, it's a beautiful feeling.
And everyone's got to experience that thing at some point in their life.
KellerKellerOfficial.com. You need the Kellervision app. 24/7 mini documentaries, podcasts, live shows, DJ live streams, top fives, subscription packages, plus products for all your podcasts and street culture sports. Download it from the App Store for free today.
Beatbox created.
KellerKeller.
And we're here to talk about world music and street culture.
KellerKeller Podcast.
Hey, should we get into it? Should we kick start, brother?
Yeah, let's rock and roll, man.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's Killer Keller Podcast, reporting to you live and direct, Central London, or essential as you need to be, should be, could be, or want to be. That's how we rolling over here. Big shout out to graffitikings.co.uk for holding it down at any weather, at any event. We're keeping it rolling. Kellervision app is most definitely in full effect as well. You can download for your street culture knowledge 24/7 free download from the App Store. We are flying across the Atlantic to a gentleman, which I have to say, I'm taken back, not just the fact that he's up for coming on a podcast, but the fact that I've been introduced. I almost feel like I'm the last to the party. Soulai inside the place. How are we? My MC brother.
Yeah, doing well, man. You're always invited to the party, VIP, no matter what.
Well, look, seriously, I mean, you know, I like to think, yeah, that as an artist first, hip-hop head second, that can often fluctuate and be determined on the kind of mood I'm in. But you know, hip-hop music run totally parallel with everything that I do. And the fact that Soulai, bro, I genuinely, the new album's fire, previous stuff fire. What the hell's going on with my life?
Oh, good, man. You know, there's a lot of MCs, a lot of music coming out in the world. And, I've definitely kept it to an underground scene for a lot of different reasons. And as I broaden and expand myself, I become more of a, you know, mainstream and things like that. And hence being able to speak to somebody all the way in London, you know.
Yeah.
Who has a beautiful body of work as well, man. You know, super talented. And appreciate you taking time out to speak with me.
I appreciate that, brother. I appreciate that. I think both you and me have both been doing our homework on this one, and that's it's very gratifying as well. You know, for somebody that's, it's a very different proposition, isn't it? When you're as an artist, you've grinded and worked for such a long period of time, opening the doors to these kind of conversations almost becomes easy but refreshing, because you know you haven't really spoken to, like you say, this side of town, this area of the world so much. And it's it must be quite nice for you.
Yeah, man, it's really nice to have my work seen and validated, appreciated. And I woke up the other day and I was like, I think I've literally been rapping every day, at least writing a rhyme, freestyling, or thinking about music in my head, you know, tracks, for probably 22 years straight, every day. So I was like, 10,000 hours. I've been doing like 10,000 days. You know what I mean? It's just as you probably know, as an artist, there's no timeouts. There's no breaks. There's no retiring. It's music. Music is a flow. It's a currency of energy.
Real.
It's a current. And as one of my roles as an MC is to capture that current, that collective conscious pool that's flying around. I grab the words. Which one's today? Which line am I going to use? Put it in a track, make it pop, make it sound nice. So it's good to be here and get this feedback, you know.
It definitely, I can resonate with that. On those days where I'm just like, yo, fuck this, I'm not going to be beatboxing, or I'm not going to be correct. It's like a burden.
I feel you, man. It can be. It can be if there's not an outlet. And if I'm not getting in the studio or I'm not giving my time, I get depressed, I get low energy. And then I'm like, how come I feel like this? And it's because like the other voice is like, dude, you got to go create, be creative, go make a video, go rap, go freestyle, go listen to some cool new music, you know, or get yourself motivated by what inspires me. And you know, what inspires me is, you know, hip hop and music and feeling, you know, feeling the flow of the sounds. And
it would be foolish for you to deny, or us to deny, that opportunity, because oh man, who is it? I watched this documentary, and I'm not like a Bee Gees fan, right?
Okay.
I'll start by saying that before I go down this cul-de-sac of conversation. I don't know and nearly enough of this stuff, but what's the name of the guy who's the only last one alive? I forget his name. You know who I'm talking
about. The last BG alive, what's his name?
I told you the cul-de-sac is real.
I've been listening to hip-hop for like, you know, 40 years.
But anyway, he was saying that, you know, these are like, you know, they're ideas from the gods, you know.
Yeah,
and you have to reach out for them. When he was saying that, he wakes up in the morning at 2 a.m. and has just like got an idea in his sleep, and he just goes straight into I mean, have you ever had that situation?
You know, when I was younger, when I was hungry, you know, as far as like learning the craft, people would wake me up at 2 a.m. to freestyle, like right out of bed. Like, yo, Soul, I spit a rhyme. I'd be like, yo, waking up, we got to sleep ahead. You know what I mean? But nowadays, I try to time it. I have 3 kids, so my energy can be depleted fast, and I can have them knocking on my studio door at any moment.
Three kids.
Like literally one could walk in right now and be part of the interview. So just a heads up.
That'd be a freestyle. 3 kids, any one time.
it's a beautiful thing, man, to have children like this.
Yeah, never had kids, me. Never been a...
Sorry, you got your hands full.
Listen, man, you know, this may look humbly set up, but trust me, behind what you're looking at right now, I've got more tripods than you can think about. I don't think this isn't kids' territory, really, to be fair. But, you know, Gibbs is his name, by the way. Anyone trying to comment and get down below and tell me the name of the Bee Gees? Well, it's not that they probably would, because this is a hip-hop podcast, see? Where did it all begin, brother? Where did it all begin?
For me? You know, I grew up in Massachusetts, and I remember I was about 5 or 6 years old, and Yo MTV Raps was popping. This was probably back in the early 80s, you know?
Uh-huh.
I'd get home off the school bus, and that was the first thing I would do. I'd run home, I'd get my boombox, and I'd put a tape in, and I'd record the Yo MTV Rap Show, and I'd listen to it all the time. And then my mom got me a tape called Rap Begins Volume 1. It had like Kool Herc, Grandmaster, you know, all these old school MCs, and I just listened to it all the time. And then I got into basketball, and the rest was history. All I did was play basketball and listen to hip hop. And they went hand in hand for me, because I was a point guard, so I had to learn how to like move, you know. And when I'm rapping, it's this. If I'm really in the zone, it feels like the same, you know. Like, bop bop bop, you're moving, you're hitting the beat like you're dribbling a ball. So that went hand in hand for me. And then, you know, the story goes on and on about where I went, how it got me there, and you know, once I completely dedicated everything to the music and to the path. And I've always been into spirituality and see rapping as kind of like, you know, the ancient wizards that lived in caves, and they do like little chants, you know, you know what I'm saying? It's all rhythmic and polyrhythmic and syllables and sounds and I always see it as that. And sometimes, you know, when I'm really in the zone and the flow, the rhymes are coming through, I'm not even writing these rhymes. I'm just like a conduit, opening up the portal for them to come through and capture them in the song, put them in the song, and then the song goes over here and goes out to the world. And then I go to the next song. So many songs I've written that I'll listen back and be like, I didn't write those lyrics.
Oh.
Where'd that rhyme come from? That's dope.
Yeah.
You know? So.
Oh, I love those ones. Oh, man. Yeah, I feel you hard.
Yeah.
And actually, when you do, you come to mention that there's so much strong pronunciation, the syllables, the way that you punctuate words, and also I feel like your lyrical skills are versatile in a legacy sense, whereby you've clearly cut your teeth as you've gone along in your career. It's not like you jumped on a mic like 5 years ago. You can totally hear the pedigree, you know?
Yeah, thank you. Yeah.
Back then in Massachusetts, because I agree with you about basketball. I think it's more for me as a kid growing up, basketball was like the rebellious sport. It just felt like it had more attitude. It was more dangerous. It went hand in hand with what was going on in the street and hip hop at the time and even now.
Yeah.
Did that marry in a creative sense? I mean, was there like a moment where you were like, did you do a jam or something at a court or something? How close did it get as a relationship?
The basketball and the rapping?
Yeah.
Well, I got a scholarship to play basketball in college. So, you know, as a kid, it kept me out of a lot of things that probably wouldn't have been beneficial for me. That was one of the blessings of the basketball. Focus, you know, having a routine to want to get better every day at something. So it built these skill sets for me. And then when I got to college, I didn't really want to get up at 6 a.m. to go to a practice and have a coach kind of tell me what to do. And then I was getting more deeper into thinking about the win-lose concept and all these things. And at the same time, I was freestyling and everyone was like, yo, man, you should, you know, you keep rapping. And I'm like, oh yeah, man, this is fun. It's beautiful. And then I thought like, wait a minute, I'm going to go like be a rap artist. So that's what I did. And
what did your parents say when you went to college? And then all of a sudden you were like, yo.
Oh, they didn't care. My mom gave me my first rap tape. She used to sing Biggie Smalls to me. She'd be like, birthdays were the worst days. And I'd be like, yo, you know, so they championed me as far as being a creative artist, you know. And and then I, you know, I went and did the whole vagabond, live on the couch, learn how to rhyme. I would print out other MC lyrics. You know, I'd print out Method Man lyrics just to highlight how he was rhyming. I would listen to Big L and be like, what's he doing? Or, you know, I loved underground hip hop back then. So Camp Low, you remember that Camp Low Uptown Saturday Night record?
This is it, what? Luchini Poor?
I listened to that record 1,000 times. You know, I was obsessed. I would carry notebooks with me. I would stay for 6 hours at a coffee shop just writing rhymes and journaling and writing. And looking back, reflecting, it's all part of self-inquiry. You know, I was actually doing some deep spiritual therapeutic work.
Self-inquiry, what's that word mean?
Inquiry is when you look inside, you question yourself. Wow. You ask yourself like, how do I feel about this? How do I think about that? And when I'm journaling, that's what I'm doing. I'm like, you know, when I'm writing a rhyme, I'm like putting myself in memory lane. I'm thinking about things like this, but I'm also attempting to write it in a way that when you hear it, it's making sense to you, even though you don't know that line to me meant a whole different thing. So like if you listen back to my new record, Hunting Teardrops, you could pick any line from any one of those songs and you might think it means this, but then I could be like, oh no, that's actually a story about when I was in school, you know, when I was 25. And you'd be like, oh,
but on that album though, you do, I mean, tracks like Counterculture, you know, you're very to the mark, because I know what you mean about the, you know, the undertones of what, you know, what certain things can mean to other people, to you. You wrote it for. But yeah, Counterculture was actually really, you know, a very strong track in my mind. You know what I mean?
Oh, thanks, man. Yeah. The beat on that is fun too. I like that track. Yeah.
Cold tune.
Thank
you. I might add as well with that album is there is a lot, it's very rich in beats. It's very rich in production values. Like with the first few minutes of hearing it, I was like, Jesus, this is so well produced.
Yeah, I collaborate, and I've been working with this gentleman named Bill Bless for over a decade. And we bounce ideas back and forth. He sends me loops, I send him rhymes, and add this, take that out, tweak that. What about this? And this new record, Hunting Teardrops, he brought in a lot of earthly elements, crickets, birds.
Yeah, that kind of panpipe flute thing that was going on a couple of times.
Yeah,
I know
what
you mean.
There's sitars, there's kalimbas. I got a hand pan I play, you know, so kind of keeping it earthy, but at the same time, electronic. Bill Bless is really well known in the EDM scene. He used to go by Soteg, son of the Electric Ghost. He's headlined many festivals. And, you know, we're both older dads now. So we're just like, yo, man, we just go with the flow. If we're not feeling one, we move it over. We keep working. And we already have a full second record ready, mixed, mastered, ready to go. Once Hunting
What?
Once Hunting Teardrops is out, I got another one, 18 tracks. I'm probably going to pick the top 12. I got some beautiful guest female singers on it. And that one's ready. It's mixed ready. I got to pick a name for it and then get some artwork for it. And then we'll keep going. We keep moving.
Yeah. That's crazy. Each one of these tunes on this album could be a single, like I say, single loosely. You know what I mean, though? You know, you could put a music video to it.
Yeah, no. And that's kind of what I'm doing for this Hunting Teardrops. I put out Ghost Steps first with a lyric video. And then I did Times Game a video with me performing. And then I got this new one called Fireside that just came out. Another cool lyric video for that one. Hopefully it's ready in the next day or two. I'll put that out. And then I did that.
Vision board was dope. That did.
Oh, you like
vision.
That one?
Okay, yeah.
Cool.
Super cold.
You know, what's so interesting to me is from the feedback I've been getting that the people that have heard the full record, they'll tell me like, oh, this is my favorite track. And I'll be like, I didn't even think that someone's favorite, you know? That's how this Times Game one became a single, because somebody I know was like, oh, Times Game is the jam, man. I'm like, oh, sweet. Let's make it a single, put some artwork to it and make a video.
Yeah, man. You're stuck in it as well. That is a tune. The beat.
Yeah, and the chorus, the repetitive. It's kind of heavy. Yeah, I like that one. I like that one for sure.
And there was a couple of moments in the album too where I liked the you had this like lower octave vocal on a couple of tunes that went with your mid-range, and it kind of had a dissonant, I don't know, I know you're more old school than this, but like a Kendrick Lamar kind of thing where there was like a double vocal layer, but one was low and one was mid, rather than the high in the mid or the low in the mid high. You were going like, and it just felt like it was really like, there's a real undertone to the vocal.
Yeah, I always do about four vocal takes to get different octave layers, because you know, you never know what happens when you put one on top of the other. And that's a new song I put out called Fireside. There's a chant in the beginning. And that's not one person. That's about four or five different chants on top layered and, you know, panned in a certain way. So they sound like one person, but it's not one person. It's a bunch of chants. So
that's crazy.
Yeah, being crazy, thinking like that.
You've got to think out the box.
Yes. Yeah.
Particularly when you're working in the box, you know.
Exactly.
Where are you at the moment? You in LA?
No, we are living, my wife and I and family, we moved up Northern Cali. We were in LA for about 10 years. My wife was there for 20. So, you know, we decided to kind of get up in the woods with the kids.
Yeah. How did you get down? How did that transition from Massachusetts to the West to California?
It's a long journey, man. And it was all it was all through music. And I know we only have 30 minutes here. I could attempt to give you a quick 5-minute recap if you want. You know,
your podcast, baby. For self.
You know, you can always for the people watching who never have heard of Soli, you can check out my website, soli.com.
Trust me, this is a whole new audience.
All right, yeah.
Bells and whistles, man.
Soli.com, just launching this on Friday, this Friday. So I think the podcast, this interview comes out to Friday today in the future. So check out soli.com. Follow me on Instagram at Soli. And
it's by magic. It's Friday. We're here.
Yeah. I'm going to give you the quick one moment that kind of catapulted me. This happened about 20 years ago. My brother at the time had a 3-year-old baby, and I was in his apartment and I told him, I'm going to make some money through my music. I'm going to take you on a cruise ship, man. And I left the apartment. About a few months later, I get the call that he passed away, committed suicide. And this was up in the Massachusetts area. I think it was Vermont, New Hampshire at the time. And I went down to Florida. I just was like, all right, I'm going far away from here. I went down to Florida. And I'm skipping a bunch of pieces, but I was at the time I was working at Whole Foods as a vitamin salesman because I love nutrition, I love health and positivity. And I was just like, I need a job working at this vitamin shop at Whole Foods. And my roommate at the time was a producer by the name of Sam Sleepyhead. He was 18. I barely knew him. He heard me freestyle once and he called me and was like, hey, man, remember, I'm Sam. I was in the car with you. I heard you freestyling. I want to make a record for you. I'm like, oh, cool. I'm like, well, I'm in Florida. He's like, you need a roommate? And I was like, sure, dude. So he came down on a Greyhound, barely knew this guy, met him once, became my roommate. And we make a record called Intergalactic Vibes. And he tells me about this thing called Jam Cruise, which is this cruise ship with all these incredible artists on it. A lot of big name jam artists like Les Claypool and Bella Fleck, Michael Franti.
Okay. So,
and at the time I didn't know any of those artists. I was right. A straight hip hop guy, only hip hop music. And so I go to work the next day after Sam tells me about this thing called Jam Cruise. I'm working in the vitamin department. This guy walks down the aisle. He's got a cough. I'm like, oh, what's, you know, can I help you? He's like, yeah, you know, I got this cough. He has a T-shirt on. It says Jam Cruise. And I'm like, oh, dude, my roommate was telling me about Jam Cruise yesterday. He's like, oh, that's my thing. And I'm like, oh, he's like, yeah, that's my, I put that on Cloud9 Productions. And I'm like, wow. And I go, I'm a MC. Here's a flyer for this new CD I made. He goes, oh, you should go on Sonic Bids and enter this contest. They're looking for, you know, DJ MCs, live guitar players to win a spot on the cruise ship.
Wow.
So I enter it, fill out the Sonic Bids. About 2 weeks later, I get the phone call while I'm at Whole Foods.
Nah. Yeah,
you've been selected as a winner for the Jam Cruise out of thousands of people. And I'm just like, what? So the next thing you know, I'm on this cruise ship performing. I meet all these, Michael Franti's like, yo, come rap with me. I meet this other EDM artist. He's like, come tour with me. I'm in Jamaica at Bob Marley's house crying. Like, my mind is like,
what?
And literally from that day, I was full music, full touring around the world, putting records out, you know, so.
Dude, that's some serendipity, fate meets.
Yeah. I remember it was about 2 a.m. on the cruise ship. I'm at the edge of the boat. I don't know if you've ever been on a cruise. This is my first time. And it's just like the ocean's moving in front of you, stars. I'm sitting there and I'm just thinking of my brother, like, I'm here, man. I did it.
I did it for you kind of thing.
I'm on this cruise ship, dude. Like, how's this even possible?
That's crazy.
That's just the quick, like, you know. And then at one point I was the lead singer for a San Francisco band. We toured around America. We did a tour in Australia. And then
Boulevard.
Yeah, Boulevard.
That's right.
Then parted ways with Boulevard to focus on my solo career. And that was probably 12 years ago.
Yeah.
You know, music will guide you and take you on a journey if you're open to it and your intention's pure. You know, my intention always has been to be creative, be the best MC I can be, you know, be open, be an open channel for the message and be positive. You know, I don't curse in my swears just because, you know, I'm not against cursing and swearing, you know, but when I'm recording something, I have the option of whether to put it in there or not. I typically will not put it in.
That's a really good point, actually, because as verses go on, I didn't notice that swearing wasn't there, but if you were to have asked me, is it aggressive? Does it have the same attack? I would have said, yeah.
Yeah.
So exactly. I guess that's what you want to hear, right? You want to hear that it's got the same aggression, but there's more articulation than just a swear word.
Yeah. Even when I was, you know, mostly a freestyle MC, I could freestyle for 24 hours straight without cursing. And I never had a fallback that was like a curse, because I always was just trying to be more intentional with my words.
See, man's got a stack of books behind him. Let's see what's going on here. The wordsmith.
Yeah, that, you know, I love reading as well, but that's mostly, I'm not going to take credit for my wife's collection. She can actually read all these. I it takes me a long time to read a book. I listen to them in audio, but.
Yeah, I'm an audio fan, me.
Yeah, man.
I'm all about that. Yeah, well, that's crazy. So just jumping back into the Boulevard thing, like, because I've noticed you've got like a hardcore devotee of fans. Like, they follow you. Mm-hmm. Did a lot of that come through the growth of, you know, being affiliated and associated with the different projects like Boulevard, for instance? Or did this come from like pounding at the door with your own individual releases?
I was only with Boulevard for about a year and a half, maybe maybe two at the most. We put one record out. When I met them, they were already a three-piece electronic band.
Right.
Freestyled with them at a couple shows, went well. We wrote a record. We did a tour, and that was about it. That was about it. We had another record ready to go, but when I parted ways with the band, never went out. So I was soul live for at least a decade before I met Boulevard.
Right.
I was touring with some EDM artists, the Glitch Mob, Bassneck.
There's my boys. Ed, hold tight.
I love those guys. They would have me up on the mic, man. And
oh man, those are my people.
Everywhere from, you know, Jackson Hole, Wyoming to Burning Man, I was doing concerts.
When was that? That must have been reasonably...
Probably 2007, 8, 9, 2006, yeah. 7, 8, 9, about 3 or 4 years. And with Bass Nectar at the time, I did about 200 shows. And every single show I did with him was improv, freestyle. It was to the point where we're on stage, massive crowd, and everyone's dancing, and he'd step on my foot, and then I would know it's a four count. I was literally like a lyrical foot pedal.
That's so, I love that.
As soon as he stepped on my foot, I knew the beat was about to drop, and I was going to just start rhyming. And when I would freestyle at those events, everyone's just loose and partying. So it's not really about articulating as much as it is being an instrument.
That's right.
What's the count? What's the beat? Where's the snares at? Okay, let's play. I'd be like, you never mess up. I'm like, I can't mess up because you just don't know a rhyme. You just go into some other sound or some other story or some other place. So.
You're in a flow state, bro.
Yeah.
And nothing can take you off that set. Once you're in, man, I've been there so many times with beatbox and I totally and utterly feel that place. You know, when you go into that place, I love that shit.
It's definitely an out of body experience. When there's been times where I'm on stage and I literally feel my body, feel myself in the bass player or in the DJ. And I'm just like, I'm just flowing. I'm just like,
yeah.
You know, it's a beautiful feeling.
And everyone's got to experience that thing at some point in their lives. That's what
I think people do, depending on their journey, if they're painters, if they're book writers, if they're gardeners, whatever it is, whatever the person's passion is, when they're really focused and there's nothing else that's mattering, even if you're like building a bicycle, that's your
state.
You're in it, you know, you're going to feel it. That's what I believe. I believe you don't have to be this or that. It's whatever you're into that you connect with.
I'm with you.
Yeah.
I'm with you.
Graffiti, which is, you know, all the tags.
I was just going to say, yeah.
Those dudes, I can imagine, are like skateboarders. I watch a skateboarder sometimes and I'm like, how is that even possible? The level of intelligence these people have.
Yeah, the b-boying as well.
B-boying? Are you kidding me? I attempted to be a b-boyer when I was young and I could rap way better.
Yeah.
Stick to microphones and words. Yeah.
Yeah, I think we all had a crack at one of the three disciplines and we knew which side our bread was buttered on, to say the least.
Even for me, even producing, like I could produce, you know, I could make a beat in 5 minutes on Reason, or, you know, because I've been using Reason for 20 years, but I'm not a producer. I'm an MC. I'm a rap artist. You know what I mean? Like, I make beats sometimes for fun. If I'm not writing lyrics, but I still want to be creative, I'll go make a beat. But I would rather give that beat making to somebody who's as passionate and as talented as I am with writing the songs, lyrical part.
And you've been on tour with, so Alanis Morissette, that's your missus, that's your wife?
It sure is, man, yeah.
And you've been on tour with her. You've done a lot of shows and a lot of touring.
Yeah, in 2012, I put out a record called Iron Horse Running, and... you know, I was lucky enough to do the opening tour with her around the world, which was a really amazing learning experience. And, you know, at times it was a seated only crowd. So that was always an interesting experience as a rap artist where I want to like
break out.
But everyone's kind of like sitting and I'm like, okay. But it was really fun. And I mean, it was a dream come true to, I would go on stage first to open. She'd be in the back with the baby. And then I would run out and I'd finish. Thank you all so much. And then I'd run back, get the baby. She'd come out and crush the show. And then sometimes she'd come out during my set and she'd sing her parts from the songs. And, you know, when I look back at that, you know, one of the coolest experiences I think about it is that as a hip hop artist, there were times where I'm performing in front of 5,000 people in Israel and Tel Aviv. And just to sit back and be like, man, I took hip hop and I rap all around the world because, you know, Alanis was like, yeah, open for me. And I was like, wow, that's cool. I'll do it. So that was a really beautiful thing. I personally think, you know.
Yeah, for sure. That's like some like family relay of like going on stage back into the dressing room, looking yeah. after your kid, you know, revolving doors, I can imagine. I can imagine that's quite a hectic schedule.
Well, you know, when putting the baby to sleep on a tour bus after like, you know, being on tour for 2 months is, yeah, definitely, there's definitely some stories, you know.
Yeah.
Put a baby to sleep on a tour bus. And you know, in Europe, in London, they got those double decker buses.
Yeah.
They don't have those in America.
What?
Yeah, maybe it's because of tunnels or they don't have the double deckers like they do in Europe for tours. So, you know, upstairs would be the baby's room and downstairs and we like lived on the bus with the baby in school, whatever.
What's it like as two creatives? Because, you know, songwriters being together.
Yeah. When we do collaborate together, it's a wonderful, peaceful harmony, you know, and you know, she's so talented that literally we did a song called Snow Angel and I had the beat ready and she was walking by the studio and I'm like, hey, you want to check out this beat? And she like listened to it for 25 seconds and was like, oh, I have a hook for it. And I look at the time, his name is Jesse Malloy, the producer. This is for the record, Wild Man song. And I was like, Jesse's like, we both had to do like a double take. Like, okay, put the headphones on her. She sings the chorus perfectly, beautifully, and then walks out. And we're both just like, okay, wow.
There's some Wonder Woman shit.
Yeah. So it's an honor. It's a blessing. It's, you know, everything you can imagine it would be. And it's also tough sometimes for me if I'm attempting to record her. I'm not really an engineer. I record my rapping, and so that could get frustrating if I'm attempting to do the recording because I'm like, I don't know why it's peaking. And so we've made an agreement that I don't record her anymore. So we'll hire.
I love that, dude. I've been there,
and I'm sitting there like, man, I'm used to like underground hip hop recording with a muffled microphone in a closet with pantyhose, and now yeah. I got 8-time Grammy winner freaking singing on my mic. I'm like, like make the EQ better with a little reverb and take this top off that and this and that. I'm like,
Yeah. That's some madness. Yeah. So, I mean, some relationships have, you know, more kind of mundane arguments like who's doing the washing up. You guys are on some like, yeah. There's too much compression on this. I'm distorting. Yeah, put the limiter on.
That's the number one issue too. It's like, I'm distorting. I can't hear. I'm like, I don't know.
Totally.
I usually record about this volume when I'm rapping. You know, like, I don't get much louder than this. So.
Yeah, exactly. And what can be seen as an incompetency actually is just they're two different worlds.
Totally different worlds, yeah.
Go on, shout the album again, bro. When's it coming out?
Today, check it out, man. Appreciate you having me. And to all the Killer Kella fans out there, my name is Soli. And to all the Soli fans out there, check out Killer Kella, one of the best beatboxers out, and play the podcast. So thank you for having me, and I appreciate it.
My brother, listen, you're always welcome. Hey, look, next time we'll have to link up and do this properly. We'll do it, when I say properly, we'll do it together.
Yeah, man. Oh, yeah, when I'm in your neck of the woods, you count on a text coming from me for sure.
Yeah, baby. Tea's in a pot, drinks in the fridge. You know it.
Yeah, man. Can't wait.
Ladies and gentlemen, Soli, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast. Don't forget, check out the album. It's on its way, all right? It's already out, in fact. Get your skates on. Get on the Spotify and check it out. Yeah. Soli in the house. Killer Kella podcast out like inwards out fashion.